Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A happy Wednesday to you from the Allstate Showcase Studio here along Michigan Avenue. And it started out as a very happy Wednesday as the Dow Jones Industrial Average sort of charged out of the gate, went past the 22,000 mark. It doesn't look like it will end the day above 22,000. We'll ask that of Terry Savage coming up in just a couple of minutes. Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business will be here in the second half hour, and he'll talk about, well, the Taco Bell outside Wrigley Field. It's getting a lot of play. There'll be a new development there, so say adios to Taco Bell, at least on Addison Avenue. And then later in the program, we'll talk to the folks from Glassdoor, and they're looking at wage increases year over year, month after month. We're on sort of a downward trend after a positive start to the year, and we'll look at maybe why that is. You know, the job numbers keep going down. ADP's out with its report today, better than expected, but we're still waiting to see the job growth, or rather the wage growth, follow that. That's something Terry Savage could probably speak to. She's on a phone line this Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to the Biz Lunch, Terry.
Glad to be with you on this very interesting stock market day.
Yeah, it's funny to me because your latest column is sort of about emotions when it comes to investing and how you have to keep those in check. And it strikes me that you can kind of see that on Wall Street, too, as they sometimes charge past these barriers, and this time 22,000. And then once they're there, sort of give it up and drop back down below again.
It's just a number, although I want to give a shout out to Dr. Bob Fralick, who at the annual Executives Club Economic Forecast Luncheon early in January said, when asked, as all three of our panelists, what the, where the Dow would be at the end of the year, he said 22,222, drawing laughter from a huge audience. And it looks like we're getting close. So Dr. Bob Fralick, great economist, we'll have you back at the Executive Club Forecast next January, and we'll see where we are.
It is up. Terry, help me. It's up over 3,000 points since the Trump election, right?
Since the Trump election, yeah. Over 17% just since that dip at the election. Look, I wrote two columns in a row. I'm always early, and I love the euphoria. And I may have to apologize, by the way, to Jim Glassman, who wrote a book back in 2000 at the previous market, before it peaked, called, headline, Dow 36,000. And I remember writing a column about that book and one other Dow 100,000 in the same column, saying, okay, this is what you get at market peaks. You get this euphoria. At the time, Glassman postulated, though, that the reason stocks were basically hugely undervalued was not because of economic growth or anything like that, but because stocks in the future would generate such great income through their dividends that they would be the preferred investment class. And in fact, what's happened in the last 3 or 4 or 5, 6 years with interest rates so low, a huge part of the valuation of the stock market is the returns you can get from owning stocks in terms of dividends. So he made a good argument then, Dow 36,000 back in 2000. The market, of course, subsequently collapsed. And here we are, about Dow 22,000. And my column, Mind Over Money, says, step back and think about it. Think where you are. Think whether you would feel worse being out of the market with a portion of your money if it goes higher, or in if it decides to turn south.
It's interesting to me that there's sort of some biology involved, right, in that your emotional reaction reaches your brain more quickly than your rational reaction sometimes does.
Yeah, this is a wonderful column, if I do say so myself. I quoted Denise Schull, who I have known for a long time. She's I quoted her in my The Savage Truth on Money. The fact is, she anybody out there watching Billions?
Oh yeah.
Okay, that great TV series. Well, she is the role model for Wendy, the woman who helps the guy who's the hedge fund guy not go crazy in the markets. Denise, she has actually done a lot of serious psychological work on the subject of whether your neurons in your brain are more impacted by rational thought or by emotion. And she's done some proof and been highly acclaimed for the fact that emotions get to your brain faster than rational thought, which accounts for why traders push a button quickly or why you make a decision that's not in your long-term best interest.
It explains why I'm 10 pounds heavier than I'd like to be.
No, that's your fork gets your brain before your discipline does.
So the Dow probably today is going to end below 22,000, but it's just a matter of time right before it breaches it and stays?
It's just a number. We're fascinated with big round numbers. We absolutely are fascinated. But I suggest you look at the big round number that's the balance in your 401k account. See where it was in 2009 when you were panicking. See how far we've come and say, I'm 9 years closer to retirement, 9 years closer to what, putting my kid through college. What do I do with my investments maybe to rebalance myself today?
Terry Savage, great to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Frank Sennett will be along a little bit later in the program. We're going to talk to Frank about a number of things, but one of them is a story in Cranes this week about how banks are starting to pay more for people with savings accounts. They didn't really have much pressure to do that. That pressure is starting to grow a little bit now, and so are the interest rates. They're not very much, but the fact is that they tend to be going up a little bit. Then we'll look at where we are with wages and wage growth in Chicago. We're up, not nearly the way we started the year, about in the middle of a Glassdoor survey of, I think, 10 of the major markets in the city. That's coming up, but right now on a phone line is Cheryl Jultscher of Yellowbrook Properties. And, she's going to talk about green housing and buying green housing, building green housing. And I've got a lot for you to sort out for me, Cheryl. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Okay. So I don't know where to start. I've got a lot of questions. Tell me about Yellow Brick Properties, because as I read your website and ask questions about it, it sounds like you will facilitate building homes, but also perhaps buying existing homes or reconfiguring homes down the block. Tell me what Yellow Brick Properties does.
Sure. Yellow Brick Properties was launched by me and my business partner in 2014. And we're centered around sustainable real estate and development of green infrastructure, like solar farms, for example. Many folks don't even know that, you know, the green homes exist, but they know that they want a healthier home, and we're there to get that process started for them.
Do you do it in large developments or in singular developments or both?
In both, infill lots. Or a subdivision, either way.
So let's say I came to you. You're in Evanston, right?
Right.
Okay, I came to you. I said, I got a lot. I own a lot in Wilmette, and I want to build a green home. Another term I've been reading about is a passive home, a healthy home. Well, what does that involve? And, you know, another question really for you, Cheryl, is how much more will that cost me?
Sure. Well, it depends on, as far as cost goes, on the level of performance you want to achieve in your project. So you mentioned passive house. That's actually a certification that you can get. It's a way of building the highly energy efficient, and that type will cost you more. You can start with an Energy Star certification, and that won't cost you much more than a traditional built house.
And so what percentage of your market then are those fill-in lots, and what percentage are the larger tracts?
Percentage-wise, mostly infill lots right now.
Okay.
I do have
new construction?
New construction, yes.
Okay. Because I want you to make, Cheryl, I'm worried about you. I want you to do really well and make a lot of money, but it's kind of a niche market, isn't it? Is it difficult finding clients?
It's not, no. Once they find us through our website or wherever, they know that they want, you know, certain features in their home.
Right.
And I don't mean it, you know, maybe they have in their existing home hot spots or cold spots, and they know that the house is uncomfortable, so they're looking for comfort. That's one of the things that green homes provide is comfort.
What is the biggest difference between a newly developed green home and my house? Now, you haven't been to my house, but you can kind of assume. And I'm not just talking about the cost of heating or air conditioning or things like that, but just as far as the feel, the environment of it. If I were to walk in the door, could I tell the difference between the passive home, the green home, and my house?
Yes, they're quieter. So mute your overhead planes and barking dogs. You'll notice that immediately. In the hot or the cold, they have consistent temperatures throughout the home. And you're going to save on your energy bills, obviously.
Sure.
And one of the is high indoor air quality. So I have clients that have noticed the difference. Their children, for instance, use inhalers in their past house and
right.
In their new house. They don't use the inhalers anymore because of the fresh filtered air that's coming through.
And that's something that everyone will notice pretty quickly, I would imagine.
Yes, very quickly.
All right. So if people, I'm just trying to get a handle on the whole thing because I like it. But I also think that if, you know, when people are going to build, they're going to pick a spot, probably location is first. And then do you work with, do you do the building or do you consult with contractors? Or how does that work?
I work with Zoetic Homes, okay. And they're out of Evanston. They actually have a brand of home that has six attributes to it, and that's healthy, safe, comfortable, smart, sustainable, and energy efficient. And they work with clients on consulting them on how to build, how to get the features in their home that are important to them.
And business is growing.
Yes, yes.
Excellent.
Demand is out there as consumers. Learning that this is existing.
Yeah, I like it. It's very interesting to me. I look forward to reading more about it. Yellow Brick Properties, Cheryl Jelcher. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business is on a phone line. He joins us now. Speaking of lunch, I could go for a chalupa, my friend.
I would like a gordita crunch.
A gordita crunch, maybe a Dorito taco. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's loco.
Well, we're talking about the Taco Bell outside Wrigley Field. And I was saying earlier, I'm not kidding, I've been to hundreds of Cubs games in my life. I don't think I've ever been inside that Taco Bell. And I guess I better hurry.
You'd better get it while it's hot. You know, loaded with fire sauce. I have been inside that Taco Bell many, many times over the years, my friend.
Pre-game or post-game?
People are saying post. many hours post sometimes back in the day.
Yeah.
The people watching is spectacular. You know, on a regular night before they got, you know, championship quality across the street, you could drive in through the drive-thru, but now you kind of have to walk in.
So I want to talk a little bit about that, about the accessibility of the neighborhood, but we're talking about the fact that this building, which is, well, it's straight just west of the Cubby Bear, right? That's where we're talking.
That's right. It's just west of the Cubby Bear. You can see it from the main entrance of 1060 West Addison at Wrigley there, and it's a Taco Bell and a body shop all going away as the rebuild out of Wrigleyville continues. 40,000 square feet of retail space, including a big rooftop patio just next to the Cubby Bear. And so, you know, you can sit on the roof and watch people stumble out of there.
And they sold it for, I think, $8.9 million, which really is a lot of soft shell tacos.
Messy melts.
So yeah. We're struggling. Our menu depth isn't very strong.
I always just get whatever's in the $5 box. I just go, give me the $5 box. And the thing about Taco Bell, it's always the same five ingredients mixed in different ways. That's all it is.
So what, you get like a subscription box like that, like the beauty products that comes to your house once a month?
Yeah, it's like that. They always have a $5 box and includes a soda and like three items of some kind in there,
right?
Like the usual thing they're pushing, and it always has a hard taco, and it's all the same five ingredients, and they're all
in different shapes.
Exactly.
Okay, so what's left around Wrigley Field, you know, that was there 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago?
Yeah, it's getting harder to find. I mean, I think Murphy's Bleachers obviously is the big mainstay.
Cubby Bear, we talked about.
Yeah, Metro bought Ginger Man and renamed it G-Man Tavern, so those are still there. And you go up, you know, for fast food, you got to go up to the Burger King at Irving and Clark in order to really chow down on some name brand fast food. But yeah, it's that neighborhood is being really built into kind of a river north.
Yeah, and that's kind of, and I don't want to sound like an old man, I don't want to be the complainer and all of that, but one of the beauties of Wrigley Field always for me was the neighborhoodiness of it, or the normalness of it, and the accessibility of it. And I feel there was a study out, I've forgotten the name of the company, but we got a pitch for a guest, and it was about, you know, the cost of going to ball games, and the cost of going to a game at the Sox game is, you know, pretty low when you compare to the others. The Cubs are the most expensive, and I get that. They're the world champions, and they're the hottest team and all of that, but I worry a little bit because it seems like it's harder and harder to just casually go to a baseball game anymore. And maybe that's personified in the changes in the neighborhood as well. It's not sort of a normal neighborhood anymore either.
Yeah, but if you come at it from the north, which is where I always go to the game, like I'll stop at the gas station there at Irving and Broadway, and I'll grab a hot dog for like $1, and then I'll walk down Sheridan past the L stop, and I'll stop at the Panaderia there and get a peanut butter cookie for 50 cents. I mean, there's still neighborhood stuff you can do on the north part, you know. As
Nuts on Clark?
Down.
Nuts on Clark?
Yeah, well, if you go to Clark, you go to Nuts on Clark. That's right. That's my favorite, actually, Chicago bastardized swear. You know, if I'm really upset, sometimes I'll say, Nuts on Clark. I think we should get that going. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think really in close proximity to Wrigley, except for the Murphy's Bleachers, you're going to see everything is shiny and new.
And, you know, it's just the way it is. I went to a couple games last year and was surprised by how many empty seats there were. All the games were always sold out, but there were a lot of empty seats, and it just strikes me that a lot of the tickets now are sort of corporate-owned or not privately owned, and if the business doesn't have people to go, the seats just sort of go empty. That's my theory anyway.
I think this is a big problem for baseball in general. I was down at the opening for the Braves' new stadium opening weekend and SunTrust Park, and they have these SunTrust seats right behind the home plate like all these teams have. And, you know, even on opening day, a lot of empty seats because they're corporately purchased and nobody cares. And so you're on TV, you see this all through the leagues. There's all these empty, the best seats are always empty because they're bought by corporations. I think there needs to be some way to get those into the hands of real fans.
I'm so glad you said that.
I'm
glad you backed me up on that because I've said it to other people. They all thought I was kind of crazy, but it just seems like there are a lot of empty seats at the ballgame. Okay.
It used to be the National League counted attendance just by who was through the turnstile,
right.
But now they do with the American League by tickets sold, so it can be sold out and half empty.
The American League crowds always sounded bigger because they were doing tickets sold, and the Cubs or whatever were doing the butts in the seats.
Yeah.
All right, so I have my passbook savings account, and I've been waiting for about 18 years now for it to start showing a positive interest, and it looks like, lo and behold, I might be in luck.
Yeah, so finally, with the recovery clipping right along and interest rates finally on the rise from the Fed, you're seeing ads in the paper for CDs with, you know, 1.5% interest and savings accounts that actually pay a reasonable, small but reasonable amount of interest. That's finally happening. It's only taken us about 10 years. And so some banks are seeing their earnings hit because now the money's starting to move. You know, retail accounts are starting to, you know, people are starting to take notice and move into some of these better offerings. But still, the interest rates are really low for savers.
All right, so explain that to me. Because the interest rates are so low, the banks are starting to make loans, but they don't have the savings. There's not an incentive for people to put their savings in the bank to back up those loans?
Yeah, well, I mean, the banks are, in essence, having to pay more to get that money in, which they then use to make loans, right? So in the era when the interest rates were zero, they weren't paying anything, and people really had nowhere to turn. So they were getting virtually free money to loan out. Now they're having to pay a little bit. But still, you're looking at average five-year CD rates are 1% now, up from 0.95% at the beginning of the year. And, you know, so it's not like run out and throw all your money into a savings account.
Right.
But finally, people who are saving are going to be making some money. And there's, you know, competition now. You are seeing a lot more ads as these retail bankers who cater to consumers are looking to get that money in. Again, so they can keep that loan money.
The ads interest me because that was pointed out in the article. One of the bankers said, you know, it's great for newspapers and magazines because once the banks start advertising and competing for CDs and all of that stuff, they spend a lot more money on advertising.
Yeah, the marketing costs go up because you're trying to get, you know, folks like us who are looking for, well, where do I park that, you know, money I saved at Taco Bell and Wrigley.
you can't hide it under the chalupas anymore.
That's just about right.
All right. Bennett DeWakenight, the producer, said he was reading a comment, maybe it was on the Tribune, where people are lamenting already and they're looking for sort of reunions of people they've met in days gone by at the Taco Bell. So maybe that's something you could organize.
I think so. I heard that there's going to be a protest there at the end of the month as well to try to save it. I just think that there are better ways to spend one's time. But
yeah,
we should start a Facebook group. Hey, I saw you drunk at the Taco Bell, you know.
Just like the old reader ads.
Misconnections.
Frank Sennett, Crane, Chicago Business. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Let me know how the protest goes. All right. So how are your wage growths coming along? Is that a plural? I don't know. But since I've been doing this show, they've been talking about the fact that we need to have more wage growth. And once the job market tightens, the wages will follow. I'm not sure that's happening. I was looking at a report from Glassdoor. They say last month, wages were up 1.2% year over year. That's down from the January high where it was 3.1%. If you look at Chicago, the growth was even slower, up just 1%, down from a peak in January of 3.8%. That's when you look at year over year. Mary Jo Fitzgerald, the manager of corporate affairs at Glassdoor.com, is on a phone line to sort out the numbers for us. Mary Jo, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So what is it about this, right? Because they told us once the jobs got to be tighter, the job market was tighter, the wages would go up. It doesn't seem like that's the case.
You know, that's not what we've seen so far this year. Since about January, as you mentioned, in Chicago, the median base pay growth is up 0% year over year, and that's lagging behind the national average of 1.2. So the labor market is super tight, but we're just not seeing wages move.
I think the 1% is up in Chicago is the slowest increase in the past 3 years, so we're not seeing much movement at all.
That's correct, yeah. In Chicago, not seeing much movement, but that's in line with the national trend as well. Wages have been stagnating. Although growing, they're growing very slowly.
All right, so why is it? We talk a lot about automation, and that's going to have an impact. I don't know that it is already. Are you seeing that maybe that is a factor?
We are seeing the impact of automation start to take effect. Wage growth for some jobs like loan officer, design engineer, financial advisor. These wages are actually seeing declines in wage growth year over year because a lot of those jobs are starting to be replaced by automated services. You know, if you're a financial advisor, a lot of that stuff can be done online these days.
Yeah, I hear a lot about the robo-investing and all of that and see that the financial advisor wages actually down 1.6%, loan officers 1.5%. And that's because of that we're seeing that as automation, right?
That's right. Yeah. Those jobs in particular, we've seen take a hit in terms of wages compared to some others that are growing very rapidly.
What strikes me, though, is in the numbers, it looks like truck drivers are doing better. And well, I guess the automation just hasn't hit them yet, but it probably will. You know, we're sitting here in Chicago and not too far in a southwest suburb in Romeoville. Amazon is having a big job fair today. And then just north of the border in Kenosha, they are as well. Amazon says they're going to hire 50,000 people across the country by the end of the year. And you guys can actually sort of see the impact of that when it comes to wage growth. Explain that for me.
Sure. You know, Amazon has really taken over in terms of the way that we consume goods, the way that we shop. And so they are hiring. As you mentioned, there's job fairs all across the country. And we've seen wages tick up for warehouse associates, up 3.7% year over year. Delivery drivers and truck drivers up 4.3% year over year. And as you mentioned, you know, we do expect automation to take play in terms of truck drivers, but that's far in the future. For now, truck drivers are a highly, highly in-demand job, and we've seen that reflected in wages.
And with that increase in wages, the average truck driver salary, $51,351. Delivery drivers up 4.3%, as you said, $38,006. And warehouse associates up to 40,811. So also in one of the areas that increased, and maybe this can't be automated, but one of the biggest jumps year over year, in fact, the 6.5% increase, is the job of recruiter. Explain that for me a little bit.
Well, as we talked about, we're in such a tight labor market. And what happens when we're in a tight labor market is that it gets harder to hire. So there are, you know, millions of open jobs out there and companies trying to fill those roles. And recruiter is the person that's going to help you get people in the door. And so that we've seen wages, as you mentioned, just, you know, double, triple the national average in terms of growth. And that's something that takes some skill that likely won't be automated anytime soon.
That's Mary Jo Fitzgerald. You can read more at Glassdoor.com. Mary Jo, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much.